Hey everyone, this is John.
This is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, episode 73, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the official show for the month of November 2016, and in which we're going to talk about a bunch of things. We got news, we got some gossip, we got a new release, just one small game to talk about here, and then we got a preview of the month of November.
Did anybody buy that game though? Oh, three of us? Do we have any, like...
Did you guys get Pokemon? I'm not sure about it yet.
Wait, what?
Did we get Pokemon? I didn't hear about this. Nobody told me.
We're not going to be able to review this, then. Nobody's played it.
We're just going to make stuff up about
it. Okay, but that's fine.
It feels weird, though, the three of us are playing, like, a new release game all at the same time.
I bet that was really loud on the ear.
I'm sure it was fine.
Yeah, I think they added Digimon to this one, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they had Digimon since Gen 6 with the Mega Evolutions.
They
yeah,
changed the name, though. It's called Yokai now. Isn't that right? I'm pretty sure.
So let's kick things off with some news and gossip here. There's not too much to talk about as far as the news goes. I mean, the main topic is going to be, of course, Pokemon. First up, there was a new Blaster Master game announced for the 3DS, and which is surprising because there hasn't been a Blaster Master game since, I think the Game Boy, but there might have been a WiiWare version, if anybody remembers WiiWare. There was, I'm not sure if that one was a remake or if it was an original entry, but this is going to be an original entry. It's for the 3DS. It's going to be developed by Inti Creates, and I believe published by Sunsoft, or Sunsoft is doing some sort of assistance with the development or something. But Sunsoft, I had no idea they were even still around. Sunsoft did...
That name sounds really familiar.
I think we might have talked about them a little bit on the Super Nintendo show, but they were a pretty prominent developer on the NES and Famicom. They did the Batman game for NES. They did the original Blaster Master. They did Adam's Family, Fester's Quest.
Oh my god, how do you forget? How would you forever forget that game?
Come on. Bit of a mixed bag. Good. Of Sunsoft games. Well, the Batman Man game was really good. The original Blaster Master was pretty good. But anyway, I think Inti Creates is the big draw of this one. Inti Creates, we've talked about them before. We talked about them recently when I talked about Azure Striker Gunvolt 2. They've done both of those games. They did Mega Man Zero, all the Mega Man Zero games in the GBA. Mighty No. 9. But that wasn't their fault. And this game is going to be out in spring of 2017.
They were only directly involved with it.
Right, they were only directly involved in the development, but it wasn't their fault. Let's talk about some other games that have been confirmed. LEGO City Undercover is coming to the Nintendo Switch. That one was originally a Wii U exclusive. It is coming to Switch as well as the other current systems.
That's great.
Yep. And Skyrim was officially confirmed for
really?
The Switch.
Really?
Yes.
What? That's... Oh, well, it was in the...
huge surprise.
In the trailer, yeah.
It was weird,
It just
though,
doesn't
like,
sound right.
What, Skyrim for the Switch?
Yeah, just hearing that Skyrim is going to be, like, on a Nintendo.
Yeah, that's...
Apparently, like, one of the head
Great,
honchos...
Great, Bethesda is now selling out. Fantastic.
You know you're on a podcast called the Nintendo Show,
just
right?
Just kidding. Calm down,
I'm
boys.
Joking.
But apparently, like,
just
one
joshing.
Of
them... They got me.
There was a line of that's an actual fucking line of dialogue
it is.
In a Pokemon game.
Man, what a translation!
It's joshing.
Just joshing.
Just joshing.
I've heard rumors that he gets referenced in Sun and Moon somewhere. I hope it's with that line.
Nice.
I'm just joshing like Bill.
Just joshing.
But there was a interview with one of the head honchos from Bethesda, and he was actually really impressed with Nintendo's whole Switch hardware design and plan for the system. So I don't know, maybe it's the beginning of a friendship. Maybe, you know, Fallout on Switch. Who knows? We'll see.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of it will depend on
They'll
how
find
well
a way
goes.
To make it glitchy.
So... Speaking of Nintendo systems and ones that are new, the Wii U, the production is ending soon. Then there was a rumor going around about this at the beginning of the month, and Nintendo immediately denied it. And then like 3 days later, like, yeah, we're ending. They had a press release saying we're ending production.
You're like, no.
Yes.
But yeah.
it reminds me of when the 3DS was, about a year old, and there was a lot of E3 speculation around that year. I think it was 2012. And they were like, oh, well, Nintendo's going to announce a 3DS XL. They're going to do a revised version of the 3DS. and E3 came and went, and Nintendo's like, we're not gonna announce a 3DS XL, we're not gonna announce a hardware revision. There is no hardware revision, no. 2 weeks after E3, 3DS XL was announced. So they do this sort of thing where they'll deny.
Yeah.
Until they've decided that, like, they probably have, like, that planned announcement beforehand. Like, no, we're not going to announce this until this date. And until then, like, no, that's not real. It doesn't exist.
Mm.
Anyway, let's talk about some Switch rumors, because there have been a lot of them flying around since this thing was announced. And we've usually avoided Switch rumors until we actually knew what the console was. And now we know what it is. So, and a lot of these rumors are coming from reputable sources, like Eurogamer. A lot of sources who were dead on about what Switch was going to be. So, seems to be some pretty reliable stuff here. And a lot of rumors suggest that the Switch is going to be coming out around the $250 price tag, which...
That's not that bad. Yeah, sounds reasonable.
That's actually really reasonable.
Didn't PS4 and Xbox One just try to launch new, like... expanded, like, better hardware on their own, and they cost, like, twice as much?
I think, well, the PS4 Pro, I think, is $400.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I'm not sure what Xbox is up to. I think they, released an Xbox One S, and I'm not exactly sure what all that is.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I'm not even sure what the price tag is on that one either. But, yeah, they're going through this... testing out this whole business model of doing hardware revisions mid-console cycle rather than letting the console cycle play out and then doing a whole new system.
Well, it's kind of like what the Wii did. I mean, the Wii got a couple more years out of it by doing a whole Wii U thing.
I mean, I suppose. I think...
I don't think they're trying to mimic that.
I think
that it's them doing a similar thing.
I think there's that perception about the Wii U, which goes back to Nintendo's poor messaging about the system, where a lot of people do just see it as this revision of the Wii, where Nintendo, at the top of their lungs, in their smallest whisper of voice, was saying, no, it's an entirely new thing.
Yeah.
It's not more of the Wii. And, you know...
Well, they probably shouldn't have called it the Wii U.
Yeah, they did not do a great job. They didn't do a great job of messaging about this system.
Well,
but,
and the cool thing is, and a buddy of mine got it, the actual VR... stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It. And while it is cool, it is so fucking expensive. Because,
mm-hmm.
for starters, if you don't have the console already, you're basically getting to almost $1,000 price point if you want to get all the hardware necessary. And that's before you even buy a game.
Right.
Like, and it's cool and all, but hey, let's, you know, for the experience, it's not worth it. I mean, what gaming experience is worth that much money? I mean, seriously. I digress.
$250
is a fantastic price
point. I mean, for I'm in either way. They could charge $1,000. I wouldn't care. But now, what about you guys? Would you guys be in for $250 if this turns out to be the case?
I mean, it's... I guess anyone else is... You know, I didn't even get a Wii U, so... What's going to determine if I buy it immediately or later is going to be seeing side-by-side games. Like, a game that I can get, because I know I'm going to be able to get the new Zelda game for my Wii U.
Mm.
That's still going to happen, right? I want to see what it looks like on the Wii U compared to what it looks like on the Switch.
Okay.
And if there's some reason that makes me think I need to have either a portable or a much better looking version of it, then yeah, I'll probably do it. But again, it's $250. It really doesn't sound so bad.
Yeah,
that's not terrible.
So, speaking of Zelda, it may not make the launch of the system.
Oh, man. It's almost like...
Yep. Ugh. I mean, and Nintendo has implied... that this is going to try to launch at the system. And there seems to be some...
Well, we were initially told it would be out now,
right?
It was supposed to be already released.
Yeah, the game was... when the game was announced, it was supposed to be 2015. And then it got pushed into 2016, and then it got pushed into 2017 to coincide with the release of the Switch. The Switch, they've stated numerous times now, like March. March is when this is coming out. This is when we are launching our new hardware.
Yeah.
They're a bit locked into that at this point. Zelda, they've never said it is going to launch in March. I don't think they've ever directly said it's going to launch with the Switch, but they've certainly implied it if they haven't outright said it. And now, and again, just rumors here that we're discussing that it might not make the launch. There are rumors of the localization and testing process taking longer than expected. And Nintendo is not Bethesda. They're not going to release a game that has 1,000,001 bugs in it. They want this game running perfectly before they launch it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that means a lot of people think that it might get pushed into the summer.
We'll say mouth of Bethesda.
A bad mouth of developer.
I'm deeply offended by that.
You should be. You should be deeply offended
by my favorite.
The shoddy products they sell too.
They do so knowingly. They almost embrace how buggy their games are sometimes. It's like kind of a cute little flaw. There's a game I've been playing, and maybe I'll bring it up on one of the mini ones that we do. There's a game I've been playing that is notoriously buggy, but there's kind of charm in how buggy it is sometimes. It's kind of funny.
I mean, the difference between a bug and a feature is documentation. Just tell people about it, but it's a feature.
That's a good point.
We were talking about Fester's Quest really, like, briefly at the top of the show. Fester's Quest is a game that is notorious for having this really flawed development where, in like, I guess the debug version of the game, you couldn't save, or it would automatically like reset you to the beginning if you died. And that wasn't intended to be like the actual design of the game. You were not meant to be kicked all the way back to the beginning if you got a game over. Mm-hmm. But they released it that way. And then it was released or at the cusp of being released, and they realized, oh shit, we're releasing the wrong version here. Never mind. Pretend like we meant to do it that way. And they had like commercials, like actual commercials that you could look up where it's like, this game is so hard. When you die, you get kicked all the way back to the beginning. Not intentional.
Yeah.
Not intentional.
That's fantastic.
Yep. All I'm saying is that Bethesda is the Sunsoft of modern time.
Yeah.
You ever play any other games?
Ancient history.
Bethesda? No.
Then shut up.
This is coming from the guy who was bad-mouthing Federation Force.
Just saying.
Okay.
Fallout, great. Mm-hmm. Skyrim, great. Sure. Dishonored, great.
Mm-hmm. Just what? Bugs. Just amazing incomplete. Game.
Isn't there a new Dishonored coming out soon? Or did it already?
There already came out. I would have it, but I'm poor. Mm. So I have to wait till it's cheap.
Gotta save up for that Switch.
Yep.
So, rather than launching with a Zelda game, the Switch may instead launch with the Mario game that was shown briefly.
Shocker.
Yeah, and there's
Nintendo's launching a new console with the Mario game.
Yeah, how about that? There was a time, though. There was, like, the GameCube and the Wii didn't launch with the Mario, which is
really
weird. Yeah.
That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, there was two generations of consoles that didn't launch with the Mario. Then the Wii U did launch with a new Super Mario Brothers game. Mm-hmm. And
did they want to disassociate themselves a little bit with it?
I just think they weren't ready.
Yeah.
I don't think that Super Mario Sunshine...
They want to be like, we are only a Mario console. They're like, we're Nintendo.
Well, I mean, I think you could probably make that case for the GameCube, because I think Sunshine was the only like mainline Mario platformer in the system, but the Wii had new Super Mario Brothers, Galaxy 1 and 2. There's tons of Mario on the Wii. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we digress. So that Mario game may be the big launch title instead. Also rumored is that there might be a version of the Gen 7 Pokemon game.
No shit.
With not launching with the Switch, but within the first year of the Switch. And right now, the code name for this rumor is Pokemon Stars. And the rumor is that it is well into development and may make it out in year one of the Switch. So,
yeah.
Some sort of enhanced version, kind of the Pokemon Crystal to its...
That's really cool. I mean, as long as this transfers to that, then I'm thrilled. I kind of don't want to start over.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's of course, if it is true that there's going to be a Pokemon game, there's got to be like Pokemon Bank functionality. Like, this has got to be feature complete.
Mm-hmm.
Another rumored game for the Switch, Xenoblade Chronicles X, might be getting a Switch port, which
I'm
would
sure
be cool.
You're thrilled.
That'd be good.
I mean, I'm not going to play it again. I can't. I can't spend another 200 hours on that game.
Mm. He has a family and responsibilities.
I might. But the Switch port, if it is indeed real, the rumor is that it's not being developed by Monolith, the developer of the game, but rather a different company is handling the port, and Monolith is already working on a new game, which they should be. I mean, I doubt that these guys just sit around and do nothing after the game is out. They just take a break for a year? No, they start working on a new game. So I'm actually more excited for what is going to be their next game rather than a Switch port of Xenoblade Chronicles X, but, you know, cool for people who didn't get to play it on Wii U, who didn't get to destroy their lives. I mean, that's a big open world game that doesn't really have a whole lot of bugs. So, I mean, you should try that one.
We come on.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Don't be that guy.
Make less broken games. I'm actually, Skyrim as we discussed before, was confirmed for Switch. I'm actually looking forward to trying it. And I'm sure it is excellent, but I'm going to rip it so hard for every single bug.
It is amazing.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, it's, it is.
Just to drive you crazy.
I know. But, you know, it is kind of weird when you're walking through town and all of a sudden you watch the little old lady just fly off to the sky for no reason.
What?
Things happen.
Because video games. Because
video games, all right? Because dragons, John. Dragons.
It is. It does look like a very ambitious game, to be sure.
It is such a good game.
And
one of my favorites.
A couple more rumors to plow through here before we get to Pokemon. Ubisoft is rumored to be working on a Mario RPG featuring the Rabbids, those little white rabbit dudes that run amok in Rayman games. And Ubisoft has gone on record saying that they are making a Switch game that will surprise everyone. And that would certainly be surprising to see Ubisoft doing a Mario RPG.
Is the
RPG.
Surprise that Ubisoft is making games?
That's not Assassin's Creed?
Yeah.
Oh, they've also officially said that they are doing Beyond Good and Evil 2, which for a little while was rumored to be a Switch exclusive. I doubt that both of these things would be real, like a Mario RPG from Ubisoft and Beyond Good and Evil 2 as a Switch exclusive. I think it would be just one or the other. If this Mario RPG exists, I would assume that Beyond Good and Evil 2 would be a multi-platform game. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens. We'll know more on January 12th when they actually talk about the launch lineup of this thing. And the final rumor going around is that Telltale's Guardians of the Galaxy might be coming to Switch as well. Which would be really interesting to see Telltale stuff on Nintendo system, because I don't think that's happened. At least not in quite some time.
Hmm.
But anyway, that's the news. Let's take a break and then come back with Pokemon.
Okay.
So, new releases. There is one big one, and it is, of course, Pokemon. Pokemon Sun and Moon came out, it was on the 20th, doesn't matter when it was. But what we're going to do, we're going to talk about, like, the main structure and hot points of the game. We're not going to get into very many specifics about individual Pokemon or what teams we're using. We're going to save that for the Pokemon show, so that we're not just talking about the same stuff over and over again. So, we're just going to talk about general and even some specific things about the structure of the game. So, first off, let's start with how far we all are. How far are you guys?
I am almost done. I feel like I'm almost done with the second island, which I would guess is probably the 50-60% mark of the game.
I've noticed the really?
Other two islands are a bit smaller than this one.
50% mark of the game, really?
Yeah. I mean, there's four islands total, right?
There are four islands total. I am just before this game's version of sort of like the Pokemon League. I just got through this game's version of Victory Road, which is not called that, thankfully. It's not nearly as annoying as some Victory Roads either. But I'm sure we'll talk about that in a later show. I would say Island 2, you're probably like the 40-45% mark. You're not quite halfway.
Fly through this game, then. This is not a long game.
I mean, I've put over 40 hours into it.
But you're doing like nitty-gritty stuff.
I am definitely filling the Pokedex, for sure.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, and by the way, yeah, like, burning through the second thing. That I hit the daycare, my entire progress in the game completely derailed. Not because I stopped playing, just because that's the thing. You got to dissociate the story or the game, like the story of the game, with actual gameplay.
That, like,
what
the
you
meta-game.
Like to do when you play this game, because it's not just like I'm trying to get to the end and then start the game over to go get to the end again. I kind of, create this state of just enjoyment in the game where I've beaten everything.
That's why you buy two versions.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I
only bought one because I just play through the game and do different runs every time.
Well, I think that this game definitely lends itself to very, like, a lot of different play styles. We talked about this about Pokemon before, and I think that having a new game to play through definitely drives that point home. Just like the different play styles that you can have, where Ryan, you're getting very into breeding and trading and building this maximized team. Wes, you're just going to build a team, fly through the game, and then start building your next team to fly through the game. I am obsessively filling a Pokedex that I've already filled before.
True. Yeah, and like for as much as we do a podcast about Pokemon, we hardly ever talk about the competitive scene.
Right.
Like, which is actually something that's really opened my eyes this new generation, is that the competitive scene is already kind of going into hysterics trying to figure out what exactly, because it's so rigidly stable the game is. Like, if you look at the top from the most recent tournaments, the biggest payout tournaments, it's virtually identical teams over and over again. People use the exact same teams.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just how it is. Mm-hmm. And now it's
That's the case of a lot of different games when you go into the competitive scene. It's just, oh, he's doing this. All right. I mean,
true.
You figure out the best thing and you just kind of stick with it. Everybody sticks with it. They try to put it down to skill, which at this point in Pokemon, I would say...
A game that doesn't translate very well, I think, to a competitive scene. Just my own personal take on it.
There's some skill involved, but I mean, if you're all roughly doing the same kind of strategies and everything like that, a lot of people use Kangaskhan because of the Mega Form, because it gets the two hits thing in. But, I mean, if you break it down to that, it's not really skill, it's kind of luck. It's just a matter of who gets the lucky type alignment in the beginning and who gets the better situations. Like, oh, I just happened to hit and he missed, so I win this game. Like, that's kind of what it comes down to a degree.
True. I think we've kind of... You had a point, John.
Sorry, we derailed
derailed quickly.
We're right with the Pokemon, with the daycare right now. We just derailed
right. Wes, how far are you? Let's get back
on that. I'm Island 2. Right now, I am on my way to the Kahuna.
Okay, so you're nearly done with Island 2.
Yeah.
Okay. And... Okay, so one of the things, one of the points I wanted to get to is just the basic structure of the islands here and how we think it compares to other Pokemon game. So how are you guys liking the more broken up structure of this thing so far?
I think it's great. I actually think they've done enough to make this feel different, to feel really different.
Oh yeah, it's completely different.
Going route to route, it doesn't... And while you are kind of being navigated throughout the whole story, it doesn't feel like you're constantly being, you know, blocked off by stuff. You don't feel like you're being forced to do things. You go off on all of these little tangents and little side projects that the game gives you, which are a lot of fun, a lot of them don't even seem necessary.
Well, and you look at something like Gen 3, Oris, and how many times they, like, send you down a tangent. Like, okay, now you have to backtrack to here. Now you have to go here. It's annoying. And when you get to Gens 5 and 6, they're like, all right, never mind all of this muck about closing off certain sections. No, just go in a circle. You're just going in a circle around this, and let's get down to brass tacks here, which is fine. And I appreciated how it was structured very directly that way. But in this game, because they broke it into...
They tell you exactly the point you're supposed to go to. Mm-hmm. So it means, like, okay, now I know where I need to go. Let me just explore the stuff that I otherwise would not have looked at.
Right.
And then that's where you find the fun in the game.
And because these areas are smaller, it's more tolerable to get yourself off the beaten path and a little bit lost. Because, like, you know what? You're never that far from where you started anyway.
Yeah.
So, and most of the islands that you encounter, it's not like taking you, like, down a straight path through the island, or, like, because, like, the first island, you, like, spiral around the whole thing and, like, this nautilus shape. And on the second one, there's, like, one path that cuts the island in half. But you're not using all of that until close to the end of the island. You're, like, accessing different parts of it. So,
well, and it forces you through grass patches. It forces you through the game and through that little cave. And then once you, like, kind of progress to that point, it opens up that major artery of a street that runs north and south.
Yeah.
So from there, like, you then don't have to worry about the grass patches. You can go in there if you want to, but you don't have to.
Right. And they do, like, these little exploration elements. Like, they're little crawl spaces that you can get into. And some of, like, there are areas that you can't access because they're just hard to find how you access them. And they'll like, get grayed out on your map. And there are a couple of places that were annoying me for a little while. Because, like, how do I get there? I want to go there. Not because I see, like these amazing Pokemon hidden in that area that I want to catch. It's like, no, I just haven't been there. So I want to go. And you didn't have that in other generations of games.
Well, because you yourself were always looking for the next. If you didn't know where to go already, you were always kind of stumbling your way through to the next thing. Mm-hmm. You kind of just had to remember the names that were important, or like, they're like, oh, this building is significant. Go to this building.
Right.
And then you find the building and you're like, all right, what do I do now that I'm here? Mm-hmm. And this game, yeah, like the way that they've converted the bottom into your little ROTM that just sort of tells you what's going on, even like pops up and gives you statements, like after you've done something, in case you totally missed all of the dialogue, it's like, oh, I guess we better go look for this thing, you know? Right. And it's like, oh, and then you just bring up the map, and it's like, it's there.
Like, and I really do appreciate the mini map that he displays for you down there. That's really great.
Yeah.
Anyway, like, in a game, and we're going to rant about something in a little bit, at least me and Wes will, about how the game is getting a little bit too user-friendly in certain things. Like, I really do like how they have just like your waypoint. So if you're someone like me, I don't really give a fuck about what all these people are saying. It's like, just get through the dialogue, go that way. Got it. I'm going. I'm going to stop in this grass for a while and catch some stuff first. Mm-hmm. So, and one last thing about the structure before we move on to some other stuff. I really like how a lot of the paths have these little mini challenges. So it's, find all of these Pokemon that have wandered off. Mm-hmm. Beat all of the trainers and then fight I think they call it like the route captain, mm-hmm. who will then, like, when you beat them, will reward you with like a TM or something. It's really cool how they, like, even all these little paths, and it reminds me of Gen 2, where every path has something going on it. It's not just like, one of my complaints about Gen 3 was always, you get to this point, usually it's like after Fortree City, where every route is just like, oh god, just get me to the end of this route, it lasts forever and there's nothing happening here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I kind of know the path you're talking about.
Yeah.
I started to go, like, south, and then east, and then, mm-hmm. like, if you didn't just get bombarded with, like, 50 fucking Pokemon, you're like, oh, by the way, here's the Safari.
Yep, that's the exact one.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the structure of the progression here, because there are a couple of things that have been removed from this game that were really integral to the way you progressed in previous generations. First up, there's no gems.
Yeah, there's no more badges. It's trials. You have mm-hmm. you have to complete trials, which are sort of seemingly, you know, feats of strength, tests of will, which is, I think, a much more interesting way to do it.
Yeah, and you know, when you reduce it down to just the bare bones, it's not really all that different. It's almost the same as battling a bunch of junior trainers before your gym leader. But because they dress it up so differently, it feels much more organic and much more a part of the world.
Yeah.
Rather than you're in this building now and you got to fight these guys before you fight that guy.
Well, say, take, for example, like one that's early on, so we're not spoiling anything, like Wishiwashi.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you first uncover Wishiwashi, you're like, what the hell is this little thing?
Right.
This thing seems so stupid. And then you get to finally uncover what makes this. And by the way, this is a new addition to this game.
Right.
And they show you what makes it special, why this has its own little place in this world. Because it turns into, like, the big, awesome monster that you are wanting to fight. And it's great to not have to just basically be like, I have to beat this one person who has four of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Or four of the same type.
Right.
Like, that's great that you're a good trainer and all that, but these are actually, like, ones that immerse you into the islands themselves.
Yeah, yeah, it's much more organic, the way they have it set up here. And they send you through, like, these really specific areas. Okay, now you're going into this forest, now you're going into this cave. And you have to go through, and right now, like, you're not going to catch anything. Everything that you're going to encounter, you have to fight.
Yeah.
So, in that case, it's a lot like a gym in that way as well, because you're not...
No, and then you can come back and catch stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of annoying, like in that lush jungle, where it's like you have to go back and get the Comfy and the Orangaroo, I think mm-hmm. it is.
Which I still have. I got an Orangaroo, but I haven't... I think there's
a section... There? I haven't seen them in there. The only thing I've seen is, like, Fomantis and...
The rare.
It is a 5% draw.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
I would recommend just trading for one.
Which we'll
table the trading.
I like that they have that kind of trading thing, but at the same time, it kind of takes away from some of the difficulty to it. Like, for instance,
True.
John earlier commented about how Salandit only evolves if it's a female.
Right.
I have a male, and I didn't realize that, so I'm like, crap, now I gotta go back and catch a female. Well, after 20 minutes, I'm like, I'm not finding a female, this is getting obnoxious. John's like, just catch a Volibee and put it on GTS, and they'll... You'll get one.
I don't sound like that.
Well, kind of. I had the same thing where I needed a female, and the way that I did it in less than 15 minutes was I breeded them. So then not only did I have the one I wanted, I had 10 more to throw onto Wonder Trade. So,
all right,
which
well,
is great. That's... I don't know if you guys have stumbled into Wonder Trade just yet. It is a complete waste of fucking time. It is even worse than it is.
Oh, great.
How well, many so, Wingles are we going
to
get?
I mean, it's not like you're just able to jump onto there. And I know what you're saying. Like, you're not actually having to go through all of the hard work to find it. But at a certain point, would you want to crawl around through the tall grass for 20 minutes, half an hour, just looking for like the random chance that you run into a female one? I mean, trading at least gives you a way out.
I mean, good. It's good and bad.
You want to know the big...
It's good and bad. Because, I mean, you're talking to somebody who sits here and plays Dark Souls, where people will sit there for hours on end using particular items to get rare drops to collect enough of these to get... I mean, people are...
That sounds like a nightmare.
They are, like... going through this hell for this game that they love. And this, they took away, like, the hardcore, you gotta do this if you want this.
And you still can. They didn't take anything away.
You still can, but it's kind of like one of those things, like, why would you walk 20 miles if there's a car right there? Well, like, so, it's kind of like one of those things.
What, that's a good question. Why
it's the journey, not the destination.
See, the thing,
so
the thing
I
is...
to beat this... Beat the same boss 50 fucking times a day.
So here's the thing, is that in order to trade for it, you have to have some sort of awareness of how trades work. Like I said, trade Vullaby, because we're playing Moon, and it's exclusive to Moon. So there are going to be people who want it. People who want it so much that they will either breed up or go find you a female Solandit, so that they can have the thing that they can't get. It's not like you're saying, I'm going to go just catch some random piece of garbage and throw it up on GTS and get what I want. Like, no, you still have to make an effort. You still have to go get the Vullaby.
Well,
it's an easier get, but you're still doing some work, and you're using the systems within the game in order to...
It's freaking Vullaby.
And by the way, it's not even what you want. It's not like you're going to get the Solandit you really want. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not going to be able to nickname it. Who knows what kind of nature it's going to have. They could have done some stupid things to it. Like, you could get a Solandit that's named OP is retarded. Like, would you really want to have that on your team if that was its name? Somebody could just dupe you into a crappy trade like that.
Yeah.
It's better, and like I said, I just did, better to just breed them. Like, you can breed so quickly in these games.
I can breed it.
I'll take a bad...
Find a ditto, though.
I'll take a bad nickname for the extra experience. I'm fine
with that. Oh, and can I tell you? This is so funny. Talk about a big fuck you about all of those people that want to hunt Pokemon. In the very first island, you have a 1% chance to spawn Bagons.
Oh my god, it's a pain in the ass.
And if you do the chaining method that exists, and where they SOS, they call for help, there's a chance that you can get a Salamence at level 9.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Like, how about that? But then you got to find the one, and then you got to chain it. You got to, like, find a way to chain it successfully so that it calls for help and then brings in the Salamence. Like, could you imagine doing a run-through of a game
where
you start with, like, a fucking level 9 or 10 Salamence?
That'd be insane.
Ready to go?
What on earth?
Now, is it everywhere? Like, because he only spawns in a couple patches of grass.
Yeah.
One of them is just up on, like, I think Route 3, one of the early routes in the game.
I believe that's it, yeah, where it's, like, down a little ramp, and there's a big patch of grass, yeah, and then there's water to the north of it.
Actually, I think it might be Route 5. But the water below that is... Malale Bay, I think it's called, and it is an area that's hard to access, and I just recently found the way to access it, which is a total pain in the butt, and I found a Bagon there relatively quickly. I wonder if it spawns more often down there because it's hard to get to.
Yeah, that's also probably because it is really, really early in the game, so if you wanted to get that one that you wanted to build on your team right off the bat, it's probably going to be trickier.
Right.
Makes sense.
Right. So, let's talk about, since we're done talking about gyms, I suppose...
Yeah, I think that's the thing. We've got, like, hours and hours and hours of discussion I feel like we could have, so it's important not to
I want
to
discuss
overdo
something
it.
Real quick.
Yeah, please.
Very minorly.
Yeah.
I just got a Toucanon.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, I just got one, the Pika Pack. I'm like, oh, this is the Pidgey of this game.
Yeah.
Let's just train him up and see what he turns into, because I have no idea. So I just saw a Toucanon for the first time.
Yeah.
And then I just used him in a battle for the first time. I just fucking love this guy.
Toucanon's cool.
He's the way he's standing, his like arms are out, so it looks like his chest is out, and he's got this smug look on his face. And if you look really closely, his head is turned, so you see his whole beak. He's not even fucking looking at the enemy. He's like, fuck you, you're not worth my time. This guy's a badass.
He's got some personality.
He's got this angry look in his eye, like, why am I wasting my time with this?
Like, now, I'm not sure if it's just like the plethora of bugs toward the beginning of the game or what, but yeah, I used the bird for a while, and yeah, he's good.
Yeah,
I like to use him a lot.
He's actually pretty solid.
Well, let's talk about the other thing, the other major thing that was eliminated from the game, and that is HMs. Which, I mean, I think that was probably the one discussion. Goodness.
Yeah, we've talked about that many, many times.
Yeah. And, like, most, like, to block your progression rather than having, like, some bush you gotta cut out of your way or something like that, it's either blocked by an NPC or it'll, like, have some rocks and, or something that you gotta smash through. And they'll use those ride Pokemon to let you access different areas. And, you know, it's a little bit strange. Like, if you want to use logic in this fucking monster collecting video game, yeah. It's a little strange to just spawn out of nowhere and that you can just use them without actually having caught those Pokemon. I still think it would be cool to see how they would build a game where the, basically, like, the rides that you could get were dependent on the Pokemon that you had. Mm-hmm. Maybe not with you. I don't know.
Well, you could assign it the task.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's what you could do. It's like, yeah, so let's say you want to find your item hunter guy. It's a Stoutland, but then maybe there's, like, 20 different Pokemon that could fill that role.
Yeah, like, so like a Growlithe and Arcanine. If you had one of them,
You default to that, but if you want to swap it out for something new, you can do so. That makes sense.
I think
it
would be an interesting way of just forcing the player to also think about what they're catching. Because if you want to get through this certain area, you better have this Pokemon. Maybe not in your party. But I mean, that's a whole other thing, because I think at, like, at some point within these generations of Pokemon, eventually, like, your Pokedex in some ways should just be like a smartphone where you just have access to your PC box at all times. Mm-hmm. They're getting close. They're getting real close to just being able to access your bench of Pokemon whenever. But
well, they always talk about the reason why you can't just simply delete HMs off of a Pokemon in game is because, hey, what if you're surfing on it and you tried to remove it?
Yeah.
Then, you know, where do you go in the game from there? And now that that's not really necessary, then why not? Just change all the moves. Trade out your Pokemon in battle. And stuff like that. I mean, again, that totally removes... It goes from having any degree of difficulty to basically just instantly beating the game if you can swap out your entire team anytime you want.
Hmm.
Or if the box itself just heals your Pokemon, then what's the point of even having healing items?
Yeah, I suppose that's a good point. If you can just access whenever Pokemon whenever you want. Like, even if they took away, like, that a swap healing, you're not limiting yourself to a roster of just six anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I want to talk real quick about the experience system that is in this game. So they did a combination of Gens 5 and 6 here, where you have that experience share, divides experience between everybody, everyone's leveling up at a pretty good rate, but then they also use the exponential growth of Gen 5, where lower level Pokemon fighting a higher level Pokemon gain more experience than if you're at a higher level than your opponent, which I think is really nice for grinding up new party members. You can add anyone into your party, and then within a few battles, they're competent in battle. They're starting to be comparative to the other things that are wild around the area.
Mm.
And it also curbs the effect of that experience share against your main party members. So you're not over-leveling things to a massive degree like you could in X and Y and Aura. So we're just getting to the end game and you're all at level 80 and all of your opponents are down at 60.
True.
So I think they found a nice balance there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they do have a couple of sneaky little features that are going to help you with experience and stuff like that. I think they finally made good use of the whole Poke-Ami thing. Where you're trying to, like, groom your Pokemon. Now it actually serves a purpose where you can remove status effects.
Yeah.
You can increase your, again, not friendship, but affection with them.
Right. There's a difference. It's a very fine distinction. But
I just finally, like, maxed out the first one. Because now that I'm actually trying to do it, I wanted to see what would happen if you did so. Does it stay that way, or does it...
Affection slowly decreases. But if you're just doing, like, if your affection is maxed out, it won't prompt you to do that, like, care stuff at the end of a battle with that Pokemon. When it prompts you again, you know, like, hey, you can do something with, like, something more with your affection at this point.
Yeah. But, I mean, I've noticed just from playing with one that now is maxed out, I just hit up with my starter.
Mm-hmm.
It just simply isn't statused. Like, I was hit with a Thunder Wave and it just immediately shook it off.
Nice.
I get ramped up boost experience from the whole thing. It crits more frequently. It just dodges attacks.
Yep.
Like, granted, it's, again, just really for when you're playing the game, you know, PvE, it's only going to have any impact. But
right.
It really does. It's such a useful tool that it's really worth, you know, developing at least one Pokemon just to test it out and see if you like it. Because if you're going to be the type that has going to do a run through with just six and you know you're going to do these six, you might as well just do it to all of them. Indeed. It's going to be really good.
Indeed. So, should we talk a little bit about trading in the Pokemon Bank?
Sure.
For a minute here?
Yeah.
All right, so Pokemon Bank is not available. It won't be available until January, I think they said. Mm-hmm. And what it has done, it has really altered the complexion of the trading. Like, it is the Wild West out there again. Because, like Wes was talking about earlier, you can swap version exclusives for just about anything you want. I've swapped Vullabies for all the starters, all the fossils, a Jangmo O, just like a bunch of stuff that I was having a real hard time just catching, like a Happiny and an Igglybuff. There's anything I want, to just throw a Vullaby out there. And I traded for the Alola Vulpix, which is exclusive to Sun. Yeah, and it really has just altered the complexion of the economy of trading.
Yep.
And you've done a little bit of trading, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've actually not only just been trading, I've been doing breeding. I've been just, like, finding certain ones that I thought would make interesting trade bait and then throwing them out there. And if there is a market for the GTS, I'd say it is incredibly liquid. You can basically just trade all day long. And unless you're asking for... Yeah, unless you're throwing a Wingull out there trying to get some legendary or a Wingull and just trying to get something good, you're probably not going to find anybody willing to make that trade. But, I mean, I've bred up a bunch of Bagons, and they pretty much just instantly traded for anything. I mean, I kind of just started with the ones that I knew people would want, like all of the pseudo-legendaries. So I've got Gible and Dratini. I've got Beldum. I mean, the very first thing, when I started the game for the first time, it was very lucky. It only took me 2 resets to actually get a female starter.
Oh, nice.
So basically, like, I didn't even have to hunt down a Ditto. I basically just got to the daycare. I had another bird. I mean, my starter was Rowlet. So I just bred up a ton, and they were instantly trade bait, and then traded one for a Bagon, bred up Bagon, traded some for kind of whatever. And now, like, all of the ones that I have on my starters, like, I have a Jangmo that I bred up and has a good nature, you know. I've been working on these Marinis, which look like they could be pretty ridiculous. You know, Solandit. Like, I just went through breeding experiments. I've probably bred up so far maybe, I don't know, 100 Pokemon.
Nice.
it's really, really easy to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe the other gens are just slightly... Well, the last gen maybe made it just a little bit easier than this, but not by much. For starters, when you get to the daycare, which is on the second island, they give you this neat little spot, like, right in front of the daycare, where you can kind of get on your Tauros and kind of get trapped in this pen and then just run around in circles and collect steps that way. Very, very quick to do so. And they also have this neat feature. Well, you're also in front of the woman that's going to give you the egg. So she basically just is constantly standing with her arms down. And the second she crosses her arms, that means she has an egg ready for you.
Yeah.
That means you've now hit the one where an egg is ready. So you can just get over there, get the egg, go back. And now they even do this cool thing where it'll go straight to your box.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Like, now you don't even have to worry about swapping items or swapping Pokemon in and out of your team, because you can basically just put them all in the box. And if you do this right, if you do the thing, I'm going to maybe be going into a little too much detail here, but if you do the thing where you start trying to hatch the egg that you get right when you walk up to her, you're going to do this kind of annoying thing where you're staggering the egg hatching, and it's going to take a lot more time. But if you just wait till you get 5, put them in the box all at the same time, and take them out of the box all at the same time, so they're accruing the same steps, they'll all hatch simultaneously. So that means nothing's going to interrupt you. You can just keep running around in circles, and then 3 minutes later, they're all going to hatch at the same time, which is the way to do it. Oh, and by the way, you can get... who is it? What Talonflames? Like Fletchling, I think it's called?
Yep, Fletchling.
Is available on the second island, I think. Mm-hmm. Yes. So you've got Flame Body ready to go right when you want it.
Indeed. And, I wanted to touch really quickly on the just transferring directly to your box feature.
Yeah.
Which is great that you don't have to, like, wait. Like, you don't have to clear out a party slot for your egg. But it's one of, like, those features that are really user-friendly in this one in a good way, because it also works in reverse. When you catch a new Pokemon, if your party was full in previous games, you just automatically send your box. Now you have the option of, like, hey, do you want to add it to your party? And you can send something else to your box, which is really nice if it's something you've been looking for a long time. Or if you just have something in your party you're not really messing with and you want to check something's nature or what it is that you got. Yeah. It's a really friendly feature for that. So a really good addition.
Mm-hmm.
So we were on the subject of trading in the Pokemon Bank. Like, and the GTS, since that's probably like one of the most important additions to Pokemon ever. Mm-hmm. And Gen 4 did a lot for like just the overall metagame of Pokemon with like the GTS and differentiating between physical and special attacks mm-hmm. within a certain type. But the GTS, that's crucial to the success of the series.
Yeah.
And
I mean, because it makes it so that you really don't have to have like one-on-one physical encounters with the mm-hmm. people that want to trade.
Yeah.
You can kind of just do it online or still do it at your own place with people you are friends with. It mm-hmm. just gives you more flexibility in how you want to trade.
Yep. So,
and it's, I mean, for me, it's the lifeblood of the game. Like, I play it constantly, and I'm always, almost every time I boot up a game, especially with the old generations, the very first thing that I do when I boot it up, see what's the last thing I left up for trading on GTS and see if it traded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
And the game is new and people are looking for stuff, especially those version exclusives. And ever since Gen 4, ever since like the introduction of this online trading, I've always tried to guess which version is going to be least popular and find out what the version exclusives are and how early I can get them and just start sending them out into the world.
Yeah.
Because it's a good way to leverage the exclusives that you have in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to talk about the Pokedex for a little bit. And not necessarily the monsters within the Pokedex, but just like the different things that your Pokedex does for you. So there are about 300 monsters within the game. I think there might be a few more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives you a few different options for how to view them. And I think that X and Y did a similar thing where they divided it by region.
Mm-hmm.
And this Pokedex is divided up by island, so you can see like what Pokemon live on each island and how much progress you've made on that particular island. The one thing I did want to say about the Pokedex is I do kind of wish that they kept the DexNav stuff from Oris, where you can see like your progress for individual routes, so that you know if like one's completed or if you have to look around that route for a little bit longer.
Yeah. There is a sort of workaround, I guess you could say. And I don't think it's necessarily... I mean, you could just do it once and then you'll never have to do it again. But they've implemented the whole QR code feature.
Mm-hmm.
And you can basically just go online and get the entire list of Pokemon in the game with their QR codes, scan them, and it will tell you exactly where they are. So rather than going to each route and trying to get the gold crown on each one, you can pretty much just scan the code and it will tell you exactly where they're located. And this is not information that's being hidden from you. It's pretty readily available.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also a feature that's supposed to be shared between people. Like where if you someone has caught one and you don't know where it is, rather than having them try to relay to you the information of where they caught it, you just simply snap the QR code and it's yours. Or not yours, but you can then at least go track it down and find it and catch it.
Yes, indeed.
And then built into that whole QR thing, if you do 10 scans in a 24-hour period, what that's going to do is just give you a completely random Pokemon. Like, the very first one it gave me was a Litwick, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, so I was kind of thrilled about that.
First one, me with Cyndaquil.
Yeah, isn't that awesome?
That's the best fire starter.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the better fires.
Yeah. One of, not as good as Arcanine, but still pretty darn good.
Well, get this. I've been doing a little more competitive, like looking into just simply competitive stuff. And Typhlosion is actually considered one of the worst competitive starters.
Hmm.
Yeah. And
just because of like move diversity or something?
Just that it's not really a specialist and it's not all that fast.
Okay.
The most popular one is actually, I don't even know the name of it.
Don't say Chikorita, I swear to God.
Okay, yeah. And the one that actually is really highly rated as far as the fires go is Infernape.
Hmm.
Infernape is super popular.
Okay. I mean, fighting fire, and it's got good stats.
Yeah.
I mean, all the starters... Anyway.
You'll be thrilled to know that Meganium is widely considered the worst. Oh, thank God.
Oh, thank God.
So, why don't we talk a little bit about Pokemon Palago, which is it's the offline sort of extra content to the game. So, what do you find most useful in there? Wes, have you messed with it at all?
What is the Palago?
Ryan, have you
remind
messed
me. Remind me. I'm terrible with this.
That's the thing where like that you the Pokemon
is
go.
The
there's
island
like
the, thing?
You collect yeah. jelly beans.
Oh
and
yeah,
you,
no, not at all. Yeah,
it's replacing some of the functions, and I kind of like it. I think it's pretty cool. I'll mm-hmm. be interested to see what comes of it. Certainly, it's the best use of berries ever.
Yeah, because
like
they're
the
just
berry
everywhere.
Farming
you can access them anywhere.
Like, how annoying was it the fact that we had to like go around and plant them each and then water each one
yeah.
and do all that?
Now your Pokemon slaves do it for you.
Waste of time. Exactly. It's just what we had hoped they would become. just brute physical labor. It would be great if every once in a while one of them just straight up died. In the caves. It's like some cave you didn't give them enough berries and a cave collapsed, killing three of them.
Don't worry, the labor eventually would be outsourced to a single Australian man.
Very good. Have you grown anything other than Lepa berries?
Oh, yeah. I've actually just kind of been... Because it's also, by the way, now a safe place to do that. In other generations, if you would just not go to get them, after a while, they would refresh.
Yeah.
And you would lose them entirely. So if it was one of those ones where you get, like, one berry, and then from there it makes two, and then you kind of have to exponentially increase them, now you can pretty much just safely plant them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, like, yeah, of course I'm going to do a million Lepa berries, and I think I've got about 100 right now.
Nice. What does Lepa do again?
Restores power points.
Oh, yeah, that's the one to do.
Yeah, restores power points by 10. So, yeah, you don't have to worry about moves of low power points anymore. You just load your Pokemon up with the best stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Bingo. So, yeah, like, it's pretty good. I've been doing that a lot. And I think what's going to be helpful is if you really are the type that cares about EVs, it's going to be useful when you breed up, or not breed up, when you just grow as many as you need to reduce EVs. Because there are berries that will reduce the EVs. So if you don't want yours to have speed, or you just want to max out attack and defense, then you use the ones that reduce everything else, and then you'll have more EV spread.
Yeah, which is great. It allows you to manipulate the ones that you like, your favorites, the way that you want to do it.
Yeah.
Which is great.
And by the way, the only one that I even have at level 3, because there's levels as you develop them, is my field. I think that the other one, oh, actually, no, maybe I have the other one, the bean collecting one out.
Yeah, that's a good one to max out first. It just gives you more beans to max out the rest.
Yeah, and you also get the random encounters. Some will actually just sort of show up, and if they like it, they'll stay.
Have you gotten anything cool that way?
Nothing cool, but I've gotten 3 or 4 things.
Pokemon. I've got some random common stuff. Like, I got, like, a Picky Peck, and I got a Magnemite that way. I also got a Murkrow that way, which is cool, as well as a Shellder, which is kind of fun.
Actually, that's kind of, I have a Zubat, which is not really worth anything, but I do have a Shellder waiting to decide if he wants to stay. So that's funny. If there's like shinies here, it's gonna be so fucking annoying if they don't stay. If it's like, oh, by the way, here's this shiny that might want to stay here, and it's like, oh, it's gone, fuck.
And then the only other island I've really messed with a little bit is the cave one, where you go and collect stones and stuff, which is pretty cool. Got a couple of evolution stones that way.
Interested to see what comes of that. I've used it just a little bit. I think I'm on stage 2 with it. So we'll see.
And I did briefly, I think I went through 1 or 2 rounds of the training island, the Evolup island, where you leave your Pokemon there for a day and they'll gain like 1 level. And I maybe as you level up that particular island, you'll get a little bit more out of it, like some more levels out of it. But, I used it to get like a Magikarp, a couple of levels, so I can just like train it real quick. But it didn't seem to be any more, certainly not more efficient than sticking at the back of your party and fighting some stronger stuff and letting the experience share do the work for you.
True.
Not quite sure, like, what, maybe as it levels up, I'll start to get some more utility out of that island, but so far, just kind of basic. All right, I do have some other little minor tweaks. You guys have anything else you wanted to bring up
before we... I think it's important not to go overboard.
Okay.
I
mean, we have a whole show devoted to this next one.
And we really haven't even talked about specific monsters at this point, so we still have a whole lot of stuff to get to. Just some minor stuff here and there. The amount of HP that Super Potions and Hyper Potions restore has been tweaked a little bit. Super Potions now do 60, Hyper only do 120. Huh. So now max potions have a little bit more value.
Yeah, they didn't really in the past.
It seems that catch rates have been adjusted a little bit. Like, there's some really common stuff that I was having a hard time catching in just Pokeballs. So it seems that, like, using status ailments and false swipe, which is something that they really push on you, much stronger than they had in the past, it is a little bit more important.
Yeah, you kind of got to work for them. Oh, yeah. And I like, by the way, that the Pokeball has now become a bigger feature.
You hit my very next point.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's so many great trainers. Like, I was in the cemetery, and it was so cool because, like, I go up to this just goofy-looking trainer, and he's like, oh, okay. And he, like, throws out, the black and yellow luxury ball comes spitting at you, and what bursts out of it is an Umbreon.
Yeah.
The black and yellow Umbreon.
It's really cool.
Just looks fantastic. Like, that's how I would make them.
And I'm like, yes.
This is what I would do.
I do like using really weird stuff. I can't remember who it was, but I caught something really inappropriate in a lure ball.
Oh, I've caught fire types. I like yeah. catching fire types in the water balls, just because like the idea that they're stuck in there and they like can't touch anything.
It's also really cool how when you're catching stuff, your Pokeball is just mapped to the Y button. You can just tap Y, select your Pokeball really quick. It just eliminates a menu that yeah. you have to go through. It makes it a lot more streamlined.
That's another thing you didn't really talk about is how they've changed the controls
yeah.
around a little bit. Now, like the D-pad, you move with the joystick now. And it took me a while to get used to that.
Yeah, that really threw me off at first.
And then you realize that they're doing that because when you actually get your HMs, this is what you map your HMs to.
Right.
So now if you just want to quickly hop onto your right, it's going to be left. And if you want to fly, it's
going to
be right.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
it's a nice little shortcut.
That's what this little whole arrow screen is all about on the right or on the left when you bring them up. You can then just choose what you want to map it to.
That's fantastic. I'm doing that.
I think that's a pretty sweet feature.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a cool little navigational touch.
And and in battle as well, you have your moves all there listed on the right rather than, you know, your four kind of block moves, which took me a little while to get used to, but it's nice that they're on the right because then you can just tap them real quick. You can just reach over with your face button finger and
yeah.
pick your move.
Mm-hmm.
Character customization is back, and you can get it early on, which is nice.
Wonderful.
Yeah, there's different options when you are first selecting your character at the beginning. Another nice little change is that when you are challenged to battle by another trainer, they don't walk up to you. It's just like, hey, I see you. I'm going to shout at you from over here.
Oh, yeah.
Let's have a battle.
Again, they also give you the line of sight warning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you notice how they kind of cuts in? There's like a silhouette that cuts in on you?
Yeah.
So it alerts you when there's actually a battle approaching.
So yeah, if you want to avoid a battle, you can find a different way around.
Mm-hmm.
When you are surfing, it seems that wild Pokemon encounters are way down, so you're not
really, like, really low. Yeah, because I just wanted to surf around on Lapras to find some stuff, and
yeah, takes a while.
And there's probably an item that increases encounter rates,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, without sure. it, yeah, it's pretty well not bad. It takes a long, long time just to get one.
And none of us have really messed with the four at a time Pokemon battles. I forget what they call those.
No.
So we'll probably touch on that in a later show.
Yeah, because I had the same situation that Ryan had. I tried it, but, I mean...
Yeah, like when you throw in a level 20 Pokemon and everyone else level 50.
You just got stomped in an instant, so...
I had just saved before I did it, so I just restarted the game the second that happened. The second it booted up, the second the battle loaded, I'm like, these guys are all level 50, and I'm like 22. I'm gonna restart.
I'm just gonna walk away from this one.
Yeah, I'm gonna nope right out of here.
Do you guys want to talk about the narrative or the characters, Team Skull or anybody? Or should we say that for a different show?
I'm just going to say how I am never going to remember the name of anything in this game. Because right. it's also fucking Hawaiian.
Oh, that's yeah. it.
And it's that place with the thing.
But they just gave me the option if I wanted to say nice to meet you or aloha or alola or whatever, aloha. Yeah. And I'm like... No, I'm going to say nice to meet you, because I'm fucking American, all right? This is how it is.
You're so white.
Mine is set mm-hmm. so that every time anyone is done talking to me, it says, I love you.
Nice.
It's a nice awkward I love you before they're out the door. You were saying, you had a thought.
I mean, no, that's, well, we can save, like, other characters and stuff for a different time, because sure, we're nearing the hour mark here.
But just doing mechanical things at this point. We'll talk about narratives and Pokemon.
Yeah,
and
specific stuff.
Yeah.
On the actual Pokemon show, but me and Wes, we're going to have to rant for a second here. You ready for this, Wes?
Let me turn my DS on sleep mode.
Okay, so, something, and it gets under my skin, This game is fantastic. Yes, Wes, we're going to preface it with, we really like this game. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go with that.
So,
Wes, who enjoys nothing?
Sorry, that, kind of okay sorry that Bethesda didn't make it.
I'm just saying. It'd be so much better.
And actually, that reminds me, my other one minor complaint, other than the one that I'm about to get to, is that...
Bethesda didn't make it. Yeah, too much. Right. We know.
Well, you remind me of this bug because you said Bethesda. I was in a totem battle. No, it was a double battle. It was a 2-on-2 battle, and the game hard crashed on me because it chugs when you're in double battles.
I've noticed that just even 1-on-1 battles sometimes lag.
Bummer.
It doesn't seem to be that crisp of a frame rate.
Right. You know, maybe the Switch version will get that corrected. But the game just died on me. I had to reset the whole system, which I didn't lose that much progress because I saved right before because this was a pretty important battle. But, you know, it was a pretty important battle, and it just decided to quit on me.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the other thing that really grinds my gears, and we may have talked about this, like when we talked about the demo, is that when you have encountered a Pokemon once, when you have faced it one time in battle, the next time you face it, it will tell you in your Pokemon's moveset what is going to be super effective, normally effective, ineffective, or absolutely no effect at all, like immunity.
Yeah.
It will map this all out for you.
Yep.
And I've given this a lot of thought, and I didn't make any notes about it, so we're going to kind of ramble here for a second. But Wes, let's start with you. We've been talking for a while. So your thoughts on this method of the game telling you what moves you should be using.
I'm a little insulted.
Yeah?
This is Gen 7. We've been playing this for how many years now?
20.
I think we got the type alignments matched up. I think I could take a look at a guy and pretty much just assume, although I have been wrong, like our Brawler, for instance, is a fighting ice type.
But then
not have guessed that.
But then you learned.
And then I learned. And now I was ready for next fight. I don't need to hold my hand in this game.
So you are the types who put your hand on the stove to find out if it's on, if it's burning.
Yes.
No, I go full blown face, just
tongue straight just, in there. He's like, ah.
So the reason why I have a waffle iron burn on the side of my face.
Oh, that's what that is.
I thought you had a waffle man.
Waffle man.
So here's the, and I totally agree with you. I see why they were going for this. It is to make it friendly to people who are new. It is to make it more accessible for people who are playing Pokemon for the first time, young kids. We were young kids at one point playing Pokemon for the first time. You know what? We fucking learned.
Yeah.
Give your audience a little bit more credit.
Games nowadays, they're either ridiculously difficult or they hold your hand through the whole thing. And it's just, it's insulting. I mean, come on.
I wouldn't say that Pokemon holds your hand through the whole thing. It's just
no,
this.
But even
when you're about to switch Pokemon, it will tell you, like, you're about to switch to this Pokemon. Here's its moves, and here's what's going to be effective against the guy you're fighting.
Like, right there.
Which is that. That is the line. Like, you can. It's really cool that they show you the moves of the Pokemon you're about to throw out in case you're not. Like, you can't quite remember which one of your Pokemon has Crunch. It's probably fucking all of them. But if you don't remember, here's its moveset.
Yeah.
Which I think is nice.
Here's the thing. They've never given you a good way of knowing what types do what. There's never been a easy way to find out, like, what's going to happen if you have a steel ice going up against an electric ground.
I just got to try it. Try and find out.
But they could at least give you a chalkboard. Just to theoretically mess around with types, where it would tell you
what something is weak to on the older internet ones. No.
Or you have tons of conversations.
In older ones, there's fucking trainer schools in the first goddamn town.
But that's just not useful. That's not useful if you're just wandering around and you kind of want to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, or if you're just, you could just throw a couple types together and then find
how boring would it be if you walked up and be like, hey, just to let you know, grass is going to be weak against fire. Like,
Some of these things.
Really? And by the way, I don't think this is a good way to do it either.
I'm not agreeing with that.
I think it is kind of silly. There should be some sort of trial and error that shows you how to use a Pokemon effectively.
First off, to your point, Wes, some of the type alignments are very intuitive. You know that fire is going to be grass. You know that water is going to be fire. You know that water is going to be weak to electric. You know that electric is probably going to be weak to ground. Some of this stuff just makes sense.
But is fighting weak to fight?
Right. So, what would
be... I found out it's not.
Fairy
I found
strong out it's, against fighting? I still don't even fully comprehend fairy. Fairy confuses the link. Shit out of me at times.
Which is why I think if they better utilize that trainer school to just make like maybe give you like a free battle experimentation mode. Like you can choose like, okay, I want to go up against like maybe once you've revealed it in your Pokedex, I want to go up against a trainer who's using this so I can figure out what is going to be effective against what.
Well, a neat little feature is actually, again, if you use the affection thing,
mm-hmm.
It will tell you, like, it'll give you a line of dialogue. Like, I remember I forget exactly what the dialogue was, but it was sort of like, I threw out a grass flying against the fire type, and it was like, your Pokemon looks back at you hesitant. But then it's like, if I throw that out against, I don't know, like, a ground type, it's like, it's ready to fight. Like, it's sort of telling you if you have a type advantage in the first place.
Well, they kind of
But then
did
you
that.
Bring up the moves.
They
kind of
did
everything.
That with, like, stuff like Toxicroak, for instance. Like, this one shudders anticipation. Right there, you know, crap, he's weak to something. Which, that still isn't a great way to do it, because they didn't really explain what that meant. So it took me a while to figure out, oh, it's because, you know, something that's strong. All right, got it.
I mean, I still think the best way to do it is just to get in there and play the game.
Oh, yeah.
And I when I was thinking about this, I was thinking a lot about Shin Megami Tensei, which is a game that I really like. And that is a game where it will also, once, and it's not like after the first encounter, it's once you have encountered a specific demon or monster a number of times and you've used a lot of different types of moves and skills against it, it will tell you, like if you're about to use a, like fire magic on it, it will tell you how effective that fire magic is going to be.
Mm-hmm. The difference, figure that out.
Because you've done it many times before. You've fought that battle before and you've really started to already figure out what these things are going to be useful against. The difference with Shin Megami Tensei and Pokemon is a lot of the types are intuitive to the design of the Pokemon. You can go through Shin Megami Tensei, and what's the Penis Chariot going to be weak against? Fuck, who knows? Like, what type? And monsters do have types in that game, but yeah. There are monsters that are Herald types, and Divine types, and Genma types. What the fuck is a Genma type? Like, there are things like...
Play the game, find out.
Right.
Like, what does a ghost do? Play the game, find out. You know? That would be... I kind of agree with what you guys are saying here. There is a much better way to do this. And I think it does take away, like, the fun and the experimentation of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's odd. In some ways, they make the game kind of trickier here and there whenever the new generation come out. But in a lot of ways, they make it easier and easier as they keep coming out. I mean, Ruby and Sapphire, the remake, the experience share got so much stronger. Mm-hmm. And now you barely have to really train your whole team individually like we did in the old days.
Yeah.
You're like, oh crap, this guy's level 20, but these guys are 16. I guess I can't use him for a while because I gotta get the other guys to catch up. Like,
mm-hmm.
So, they took away that aspect of it, which is nice because now you don't have to do the whole big level grind, but you can burn through the game at significantly less time.
I think as you play through Sun and Moon here, and especially as, like, I think the game intends for you to make adjustments to your team as you play through it. I don't think that Pokemon games ever intend for you to be able to, like, pick six at the beginning and run through the entire game.
No, and I agree there. That's why you find them later in the game at higher levels. You could just immediately just stick them in your team.
And I think that the adjustments that we talked about, like mixing in the Gen 5 exponential stuff to your experience, does help assuage that over-leveling that you'll experience. Mm-hmm. But anyway, just... Any wrap-up thoughts on how they just kind of spell out what moves would be super effective? Like, I don't think this is game-breaking, but I think that it is one step away from just being like having it highlighted, like having Rotom sit there like, hey, you should move this, use this move in this battle. Like, no.
Which Rotom, I think, is a pretty interesting concept, but at the same time, you know he's a little shit. Yeah, shut up, you little fucking... Shut up.
it's weird. There's like...
He's the Navi of freaking Pokemon. I mean...
And there's this erotic...
You have to tap him just to wake him up.
and there's like... He gives like slightly erotic lines of dialogue. Like I had my Pokedex evaluated and he's like, oh, you found 50%. Way to go there, big boy. He's like, whoa. Dude.
This is a purely professional relationship we got here, dude.
Indeed.
Right.
You're my appliance.
I'm crying out loud.
Might as well be my microwave hitting on me. But anyway, yeah, I don't like this addition. I think that we're all in agreement that this is not a good way to teach you the mechanics of the game.
I think they realized it's something that they need to do, and they found a bad way to do it. Or they found the easiest way possible to do it.
Yeah.
Just to simply tell you.
There is a lot to keep track of. And there are, and we'll probably talk in the Pokemon show, there are some interesting type combinations.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather them figure something else out here. Anyway. Anything else you want to say about Pokemon Sun and Moon before we wrap the discussion for about a week?
I think we're good.
Cool.
We'll get to it.
Cool. All right, so... Let's take a quick break and come back with some new releases coming out in December. All right, we got three new releases to get to. So let's kick things off. Wes, take us away with Shantae.
Let me stretch out.
Shantae, Half Genie Hero.
Son of a bitch. You gave me a Shantae game to read?
Yep. And this game, the release date is still TBD. Amazon is maintaining that it's coming out on December 13th. I don't think WayForward has said anything official, but they're trying to get it out before the end of the year. So let's just assume it'll be December. So take us away, Wes.
Half Genie?
Half Genie Hero.
Join the Half Genie full bitch, Shantae. Does not say that. As she defends Sequin Land from a host of vile villains, go villains, including the nefarious pirate Risky Boots. Explore action-packed worlds, conquer diabolical bosses, and belly dance to transform Shantae into powerful new forms.
Yep.
She is, what a hooker.
Keep reading.
Shantae's big screen debut is a brand new full HD adventure.
Oh, these are the bullet points. These are the bullet points.
Bullet points.
Yeah.
A visual feast of thousands of frames of hand-drawn animation. Experience new storylines and playstyles with each additional DLC character. The pirate gear-wielding Risky Boots.
Gear-wielding.
Bird Trainer Sky. Chain-lashing Bolo. And brain-eating zombie Roddy Tops are just the beginning.
Jesus.
Pirates and brain-eating zombies. Yep. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Future DLC include ninja, cybernetic officer, and beach costumes, each granting entirely new ways to play as Shantae. Classic controller pro support.
I think that's the last.
That's the last. That.
Yeah.
Okay, so essentially, right there, that line right there. Future DLC include ninja, cybernetic officer, and beach costumes.
Yep.
Instantly went to Final Fantasy X2 in my head.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The dress sphere.
Not a good place to be. don't want to go there.
Didn't you try to play that game like a million times?
I did beat it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
You know.
You must have liked it on some level.
Trying it. It's a Final Fantasy game. It's kind of like I don't want it there, uncompleted.
Well, see, it's like Final Fantasy. We haven't completed Final Fantasy VIII. We haven't done it. But it's like Final Fantasy VIII. Like,
yeah, but would you rather complete Final Fantasy X2 or 8?
I think I would rather try 8 again.
I would think I would rather put my head in a car door.
Like, that's
and
not
just
an option.
Close it
like,
repeatedly.
Like, gun to my head, it is your children's life or play one of these two games. And, like, to completion, I would probably play Final Fantasy X2 to completion because I feel like it's shorter.
Yeah.
But I've only ever tried X2 once, and I didn't get very far. But like the battle system, like the actual battle mechanics, is pretty similar to X, right? It's just like the job system that's changed.
No, it's a full blown time based combat.
Oh, it's got an ATB again.
Yeah,
okay.
It's got full blown that, and like you're changing dress spheres to determine what kind of abilities they got. It was just wacky. It was. Just the story was the reason why, mostly. It's
okay.
So bad.
I'm looking forward to it now.
Ugh.
But I'm also looking forward to Shantae, because this is a game from WayForward, and they've done a lot of cool games that I have liked, and I liked the previous Shantae game as well. And I'm looking forward to this one because, like, the previous Shantae game was good, and it was about 8 hours long. So this will be a nice.
She belly dances her way into old men pants.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
So...
yep. Right into that.
I'm guessing she's a hooker.
And she can like transform into an elephant and a spider to climb on walls and shit.
And a ninja and a cybernetic officer.
That's. I think those are just DLC costumes, because I think that. I'm not sure how this is going to work because, like, not all of the characters have, like, the animal transformations. But if, like, she can be a cybernetic officer that then transforms into a cybernetic elephant, like, yes. Yes, I will give you $5 for that DLC. It's fine.
So, wait, mechanically, she's half genie. What is
right.
The other half of her?
Like...
elephant?
Prostitute.
Yeah.
prostitute, of course.
We've addressed this many times already.
Like, I don't get this. Like, what's going on there?
Anyway, let's move on. I'm going to play this game. You guys are going to have to suffer through me talking about it.
Oh,
hopefully next month. So let's move over to...
Ryan, I'll be joining you in the beers. I'm going to get through that one.
Which, by the way, I'm drinking the Brooklyn Comic-Con Special, the Defender IPA.
Nice.
For once, I'm not drinking shitty beer.
Yeah, well, you know.
Let's move over to Super Mario Maker for Nintendo 3DS.
Get ready to play.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Go
Mario
ahead.
Maker's
go
coming
ahead,
to 3DS.
I got a burp.
Marty.
Get ready.
No, I'm really pumped about this one.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's going to be pretty stoked about it.
Cool. Let's get into it.
As you were, Gus.
Get ready to play a near infinite number of side-scrolling 2D Mario courses anytime, anywhere.
I think that's mathematically inaccurate. How can you be near infinite?
I don't know.
Right. It approaches infinity.
I guess, like, two approaches infinity, though. Like, it's
that's true.
Going in the right direction.
In a mathematical sense, two as close to infinity as 1 million is. Like,
yeah. It's not like it's a number. It's just a theory. It's like it's like some way things can happen.
Right.
The show just got deep.
Like we talk about some real important stuff here.
We should start including you on our mathematics podcast.
Earn in-game medals in 100 built-in courses and access recommended courses from the Super Mario Maker game on the Wii U console, plus design courses and share them with other players via the Street Pass feature and local wireless. So you can access Wii U courses on. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. However, and I don't think they touch on this in this description, which we'll get back to. The courses that you make in the 3DS version, you don't actually upload to the internet. You can only share them locally, which is a bit of a bummer, and is why some people are bummed about this game. But you can access all of the courses that have been made. And that's kind of the trade-off for scaling this game down to the 3DS.
Okay. Want your cans to shoot coins? Go for it! In this game, you call the shots, and simple touchscreen controls and interactive tutorials make designing courses a snap! Learn design tips and tricks from Mario and Yamamura.
From who?
Mario and Yamamura.
Mario and Yamamura.
It's really not Mario. You're just...
No, Mario.
Fuck. Mario and Yamamura.
Because Nintendo.
Yeah, sure. Then share your masterpieces via the Street Pass feature and local wireless. It's not even in the bullet points. It was like a sentence.
No, that was just the previous sentence.
Oh, God damn it.
Collaborating
has never been easier now that you can share incomplete courses with other players. Finish off a course together, and a special icon will commemorate the collaboration. God, that was
crazy. I mean, that actually is a pretty cool
commemorate
feature.
Commemorate the collaboration.
Indeed. Collaborate.
That is actually a pretty cool feature. So if we all had copies of the game, we could like each make a part of a course and bounce it back and forth between the three of us until it was done.
That's pretty cool, actually, yeah.
But then we'd never be able to upload it onto the internet.
So, like, who cares? Nobody will ever see it.
Right, it'd just be us three playing it.
Then one of us could sit in front of a Wii and transcribe this.
Shit, yeah,
Oh my god, we could. That's one of the main reasons that this is the must-play portable Mario game for inventive groups of friends and anyone yearning for never-ending Super Mario magic.
Bullet points!
Enjoy a nearly limitless supply of side-scrolling 2D Mario courses anytime, anywhere.
Whew.
Take on 100 built-in courses as you tackle the Super Mario Challenge. Create the Super Mario courses of your dreams. Play recommended courses from the Super Mario Maker game on the Wii U console and take on that game's 100 Mario Challenge. Share courses with other players via the Street Pass feature and local wireless. For the first time ever, collaborate to make special shared courses.
It was cool.
Now featuring nudity.
Every time I do that, I feel like I'm a news anchor that's just reading the newspaper on air.
I'd watch that. Watch that news.
It's a tragic news today.
A
Serenity star found dead drowned in his pool.
Oh, that's tragic. He's not coming back to life.
He's dead.
Real dead.
I don't know about that.
So, I mean, Super Mario Maker for 3DS, it's everything you loved about Mario Maker, but less of it. I mean, it's...
Did you feel like you had too much fun in this? Don't worry, we took some of that out for you.
We've toned it down. we took a little spice out of the chili. Don't worry.
I mean, it is really strange that such an online-centric game is getting scaled back and having some online features removed. I mean, I guess it's just kind of their way of being able to get this game on the system and get it out to like a larger install base than they had in the Wii U. Because I don't think it sold poorly by any means on Wii U. But, you know, you got a system with an install base of 13 million, and then you got another system with an install base of 60 million. You're playing the odds there. You're going to get some more people buying it.
True. And it's a game that still is like, I don't play it all that much, but I still like watch levels that other people build, and some people are fucking geniuses with it. They've really done so much with the game.
Yeah. But, I mean, the main thing that got me thinking about this game, the main topic I got thinking about when thinking about this game, was that, like, what could this possibly mean for a Switch version? Because one of the rumors since Nintendo said they're working on a new system is that they might bring over a bunch of Wii U games to a new system to kind of give them a second life, because we all know how the Wii U worked out. So games like Mario Maker and Mario Kart and Smash Brothers and Splatoon, like, these are all games that had a lot of appeal and a lot of multiplayer appeal, but not a whole lot of players were on Wii U. So you move them over to your next system, maybe give them a little bit of a tweak, and give them a second chance. So do you think it would be likely that Nintendo would just go ahead and release a third version of this for the Switch? I mean, I think if they're going to do
it... Will it make them money? If yes, no.
They do have an aversion. They do have an aversion to making a lot of money. I mean, I to that point, I do think that they're like, there are certain like key figures at Nintendo who are just massive trolls. They're just like, will people really like this? Let's not do it. And they're just getting a huge kick out of driving people crazy. It's like the NES Classic situation. Are a lot of people going to want this? Oh, hell yeah. Let's not make any. Let's just release 8 and let them fight over it. Or like the special edition 3DS, the one that released for $99.
I listened to your recently. You did a solo podcast.
Yeah.
Not that long ago. Yeah. Because apparently you don't want to call us anymore.
Asshole.
What
the hell, man? Asshole.
Okay,
this is as much our podcast as it is your own.
So here's the thing. I was quite sick.
I bring it up.
And I didn't want to make you guys sick, but I wanted to get something posted because it'd been like a week and a half since we did anything. So I was like, you know what, fuck it. I'm sick. I canceled on them. I was going to do something. And I do actually have to apologize also for that show. Because toward the end, there was like a minute and a half of silence.
He just dozed off.
I totally fucked up. Yeah, I fell asleep. That's a better explanation. That's less embarrassing. I fucked up the editing. And I must have like coughed mid-sentence. And then as I was splicing things around, like cutting stuff out, there's this gap in the audio. So there's a minute and a half of silence, like mid-sentence. I like start saying one thing, and then a minute and a half later, pick immediately back up with it.
Yeah.
So yeah, sorry about that, everybody. That's embarrassing.
But in that episode, you bring up the notion of Nintendo's potential idea of forced scarcity.
Uh-huh.
Like that they, and I think a lot of it is they don't, because the big thing that you were talking about was the whole throwback NES system, which sold like gangbusters, pretty much immediately sold out.
Yeah, it's gone. You can't find it.
I mean, from their perspective, they're probably like, these are old games that people have already bought and can still buy on our own virtual consoles. So like, maybe they didn't realize there was going to actually be this retro like love for this.
Okay, thing. So you think they're just stupid?
Yeah, I think it was a poor business decision. I think they could have easily pumped out more and made more money. Or maybe they're just going to build more.
I don't think you could ever underestimate how oblivious Nintendo can be at times. Like they don't exactly have their finger on the pulse. I mean, they do their own thing. I don't think that I doubt that any of them play other games on other systems ever. They just kind of like, no, we're going to make games the way we feel like making because this is what we have fun doing.
Guy bursts into the room. He's like, I found this amazing new game and it's a pack of cards.
but especially Nintendo of America. Nintendo of America is so conservative in the way that they handle distribution. They probably knew, like, we will absolutely sell this amount. So that's the amount that they chose to have.
Let's write this check to ourselves.
Right. And then like, okay, and once we sell all of that, we'll gauge how much people want this thing and start releasing more to meet that demand.
They realize there's just people like banging at the door.
Right. And like 30 minutes after it was all sold out everywhere, you're like, well, shit, like, yeah.
Why do you do the right thing?
People seem to like this. So I don't think that they're intentionally driving people to outrage. I want to think that they're intentionally driving people to outrage because that's fucking funny. But
that's also got, they also kind of have to be thrilled that if there's a news article about them, it's sort of like insane scarcity. The thing that everyone wants for this Christmas season is now gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, it's a Nintendo product.
Right. Oh, well, yeah, it does get their name back out there in the mainstream. And it's funny because, like, in the midst of Sony and Microsoft releasing new versions of their brand new consoles to very little to middling fanfare. Like, I think
that's gotta be such you know, pissing in their coffee.
Right.
Like, here's this 20-year-old game.
Here's this 30-year-old toy. Everyone's crazy about it.
Super Scope.
Yeah.
Bringing back the Super Scope.
I really hope they continue to, like, keep this run of classics going. I mean, they probably shouldn't wait too long, which means they probably will wait too long. Mm. But, like, to do, like, a Game Boy classic. Just, like, this little handheld that's got, like, 30 different Game Boy games. Or and we've already talked about, like, the Super Nintendo classic.
That one I'm 100% on board with. I will drop money for that guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, NES Classic, I'll eventually...
Well, they're setting a precedent that people will buy these, so it means that maybe they could do it for friggin' any console they have whenever they feel like it. I mean, at their own expense, though, because it comes to a point where it's probably starting to eat a little bit of the money away that they are expecting to get
They should have known. They're not the first people to do this. There was an Atari that was released that way. There was a Sega Genesis that was released that way.
Those things, and yeah, it's the same idea.
It was tough to find that one Christmas, the first Christmas it came out, because, I mean, we have in my store, but I burned through them really quickly.
Then the idea is the same as these compilation, like, plug-and-play systems. The difference is it seems like Nintendo has put a lot more money into just the overall build and presentation of these things. Like, they're like the Sega Genesis ones, that's like a controller you plug into the TV, those are pieces of garbage. Like those.
No, the one I've seen and the Atari one, they look like the original Genesis. They look like the original Atari.
But you still seen the original Genesis one.
Yeah,
that'd be pretty cool. Anyway, what were we talking about?
We
were talking about Mario Maker.
Yeah, we were.
Yeah, we were talking about Mario Maker.
And then you started talking about the 3DS that sold out really quickly.
Yeah. Oh, but to your point about, like, maybe
point of you being a douche.
right. About doing a solo show. But you also mentioned that, like, maybe this would eat their own lunch a little bit from, like, money they would make in the virtual console. I think there are times where they're actively trying to not make money on the virtual console. Yeah. Again, it's one of those things where it makes too much sense to have this really great service continue to run. So we're not going to do it. No more virtual console for anyone.
Yeah, and you look back at, like, when these titles were once available, and now they're not because they let the licensing go on them, or... Like, it's just, I don't know.
I think that and Retronauts did a really good podcast about, like, a retrospective of the virtual console, because it's been around for about 10 years now. And they brought up a really good point, and it's my sentiment exactly, where we view virtual console from a distance, just like an aggregate, like, see everything that is available across all these different systems, virtual console. It looks great. You look at all, like, this list of huge games and stuff that is rare or hard to find, and just, like, all of your staple games. Most of the stuff you would want is there. But in the expanse of 10 years, it's not like it was all just there. It was this, after the first couple of years, this slow feed of a few things here and there. Maybe you get a couple of good things a few times a year. I don't know if they ever really knew what they were doing with Virtual Console. It was just kind of like, we're going to do this thing where we put old games that you can download on the system, and they release all the staples, and they're just kind of like, well, now what? Who's in charge of this? Anyone want to volunteer? Mm-hmm. No? Okay. Well, let's just kind of figure it out as we go. There never seemed to be, like, a very good plan for what Virtual Console was supposed to be.
Well, it's also a unique thing for them, because they've been around for so long. They're really the only thing still running that's been around this long. And it's like, and I'm sure there is classics, like PlayStation classics.
Yeah, on PS3, they had the PS1 classics.
People aren't, like, really, you know, creaming their jeans over the idea that they can go back and play a fucking PlayStation 1 game.
I'd play Suikoden. But sure. I know you mean there's...
I need to go back and play that fucking bouncer game that Square made.
Oh hell yeah.
That's worth it.
But it's I don't think we haven't reached, like, the critical mass of nostalgia for PS1 that people have for NES and Super NES. Mm-hmm. Like that, and maybe we never will. Maybe
that's I don't think we ever will, no.
Maybe that nostalgia doesn't exist for that
system. They didn't hit that sweet spot where it's like our generation grew up on that, and then even the kids that grew up playing PlayStation 1 games probably also played some Super Nintendo games, so they played other games where maybe they've, I don't know. I just don't think it has that sweet sentimentality. Like Americana, when we're talking about what makes America great, we talk about that America. You know, it's not the fact that we have a giant military, it's that we love baseball, that, right? Like, we have Thanksgiving and Christmas. We have all these things that are our own nation, right?
Fourth of July. No one else gets fucking Christmas. Fuck you guys. Everyone else.
Maybe that's a bad point. I don't know. But there's the
Fourth of July and
apple pie.
And fucking Memorial Day.
Sunflower seeds and fucking
hot dogs.
Hot dogs and hamburgers and shit. I don't know. I mean, these are the things that we identify as a culture, right?
And suburbs, I feel like
gaming has this history, this culture, and it's, you know, rooted in the Nintendo.
Yeah. But I do want to, like, touch on your point really quick. Yes, Wes, you have raised your hand.
You can edit this out. What the hell is this thing?
That's an Altered Beast. You'll find out.
It catchable?
It's an Ultra Beast. I think it might be endgame stuff.
I can't catch this one.
You can catch him.
I can catch
him. At some point. I don't think you can catch it.
Like, is that the right one that now? Looks like can I catch this right now?
Throw a ball at it.
It looks like a big squid, right?
Yeah.
I think you have an encounter with it before you can catch it.
But I do want to go back to, like,
I can't throw it. Okay, I see.
I do want to get back to your point about the PS1 classics, because on PS3, like, they were just, like, huge ROM dumps of all these PS1 games, like, just fucking everything. Put everything on there all at once. Mm-hmm. And from a certain perspective, it's cool that you have that selection, but they also didn't do much testing, which Nintendo does any time that they're going to release a virtual console game. They do extensive testing to make sure these things are working as best they possibly can on those systems. I appreciate that they do that. I don't like I don't want to have, like, a virtual console. It looks like fucking Bethesda did it. Mm-hmm. No? Okay.
Sorry. I'm focused on the Ultra Beast, all right?
Okay.
What the hell that thing was.
No, it's Ultra Beast, right? Like, Rise from your grave.
But the idea that it would just be, like, a ROM dump and fix it later, like do a patch for a virtual console game, like, I don't... And that's something that they talked about in that Retronauts podcast. Like, oh, they should just, like, try to make as big a library as they can available, and if something doesn't work, go back and fix it later. Like, no, I prefer that you get a game that works rather than say, like, no, let's fix everything after the fact. And I think what I was mentioning earlier about, like, the virtual console not really having a plan, I think that you can see that when you look at, like, the Wii U virtual console, how it just wasn't like, hey, everything you had available to purchase on the Wii is now also available to purchase on the Wii U.
Oh, how you have to boot up into your old Wii platform to play the games that you had got on the Wii console.
And there are some that you can transfer over, but it wasn't like just it wasn't just like moving the library books to a new building. It was, here's your library of possible Wii virtual console games that you can purchase in our shop. Here's our new platform, the Wii U, reset button. Nothing's available. We're going to bring them out one by one again. It wasn't like, hey, you can buy all the Mario games, all the Zelda games, all the Metroid games on the Wii, and now the new system's out, you can buy them all on the Wii U as well. It was like, no, start from zero, redo. And I think if they had a little bit more forethought and planning with Virtual Console, it would have been everything that was available to purchase on this system is also available to purchase on this system, and we will continue to build from that.
Yeah.
And you could also see that on the 3DS, where, like, hey, we now have Super Nintendo games available, but not all at once, and you're going to get them a few at a time here. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we digress.
Me too, digress.
The other game coming out next month is Super Mario Run. That one is for the iOS.
That's our phones.
Yep.
iOS is what a phone is, yes.
Yes, that is, yeah.
Thanks, Ryan.
I'm helping.
A lot of people are under the impression that it is an infinite runner. It is not an infinite runner. It is intentionally designed stages. It is an auto runner. Mario will keep moving forward. You control his jumps. The idea is there is you're playing with one hand, so you can jack off with the other. I knew you were going to... But, and anyway, there's...
No, so you can drive your car.
yes, sorry. Because I do like to play games while I drive my car.
And you gotta be, I mean, you're holding a beer as well, so I mean, come on.
So, there does seem to be some sort of deeper mechanic going on rather than just tap to jump, because you do see Mario doing a long jump in a couple of the videos. I don't want to get too in deep here, because we're running long. I think, like I always do, I like to address the unsubstantiated outrage that the internet has. People are mad about the $10 price tag. Are people not aware of what games cost? Like, $10, that's cheap. What is...
Yeah, it's a phone game, though.
So?
Phone game.
So?
It would probably be the most I've ever paid for a phone app.
Okay.
Thing.
Yeah, like, this is nonsense.
It's $10.
I could see it for a few dollars, but I mean, $10, you're like, goddamn.
What's the difference between $4 and $10?
$6.
Yeah, what are you going to do with $6?
Buy food.
So bring lunch to work one day rather than buy fast food.
I'm just saying, in general.
Yeah, it's one...
Buy bulk rice, asshole.
it's $6. Like, if this... And this game, $10. That's, what, 2-3 cups of coffee? It's...
Yeah, but I mean, you also gotta look at it this way. A lot of people with their cell phone games and those apps and everything like that, you don't sit there and play this continuously over and over and over again.
Well, here's the thing. Like, can I tangent onto this?
You play it for like a week, and then you're like, I'm never gonna touch this again. I mean, that's just...
Maybe they're going for something different.
Yeah.
Well, I've become addicted to a game that I play, which is nobody else is gonna give a shit about it. I like it because my 6-year-old nephew showed it to me, and I started playing it, and he thinks I'm a rock star at it.
Was it Ninja Turtles?
It's this Ninja Turtles game, and it's so fun and addictive, and I like it because it's competitive battling, and you build a team, and you build another team, and you fight, and it's great. And like, you get to level your characters and stuff.
Ooh, I bet that wasn't annoying.
Yeah. But here's the thing: like, now that they've done it, they've got this formula for like this. You build a team, they build a team, and you fight. And now there's a Star Wars one, there's a DC one, a Marvel one. Like, nice. Everything you can imagine has found a way. And what
reskin it.
Bugs the shit out of me is it's free to play, but then they have these really annoying things that they want to make you do. They create that scarcity of like the play mechanic. If you just want to play the game, you know, you actually have to have this resource that recovers over time.
Right.
And it bugs me. Because I've never spent a dime on these games. And I think the Ninja Turtles one's fun. You don't have to spend money to enjoy the game. But it would certainly help if you wanted to, you know, throw money at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that if I am paying $10 for a Mario game, that it is complete in a package. Like, I hope that's it.
Yep, that's it.
That they're not expecting me to throw any more money at it to enjoy it, that I can just enjoy it like a game.
Yep, it is the game. You buy the game, you own the game, it is your game now.
Okay, then this is actually... Then, yeah, I would honestly consider spending $10 for it.
They're not going to nickel and dime you with these in-app purchases. They're not going to, like... There's no, like, required... like wait time to play another stage. It's like, no, this is just the game. And it's a very different approach to the mobile market, but Nintendo never said when they were going to make phone games that they were going to make phone games the way everyone else makes phone games. It was like, we're going to make games for the phone, but we're going to make games the way we want to make them, which is, you know, in my humble opinion, the right way to make games and not like these big whale catchers that feed on people's addictions. Like,
yeah, bingo. I see so much of that. This
is also the... But they're also now selling 3DSs without the charger. So, I mean... Goddamn.
That is kind of slimy.
It is, like... Seriously,
they're not,
the hell?
They're not the only company that reintroduces hardware. Like, it's not, like, a practice exclusive to them. But, yeah, if you're going to release a system, give people a way to charge the battery.
That's messed up.
I wish it was like, you remember Sega was much more honest. When I got my Game Gear, they gave me 200 batteries. Didn't they do that for you guys?
It's like if you go to a car dealership and buy a new car and they charge you for the keys. I mean, it's just...
Have you bought a new car before? I bet you they fucking do charge you.
They probably do. Yeah. So I guess that's probably where they got it then.
And like Shigeru Miyamoto went into a car dealership like, oh yeah, it's this much for the car and it's this much for the wheels. And he's like, that is a tremendous idea.
That's really shitty to do that.
Yeah.
This is the most recent 3DS I've purchased and it came with a charger.
Okay, well good.
But it's also like, I think, 2 years old now?
Yeah, all of the new models of DS, I think 2DS still comes with the charger, but like all of the new 3DS models, nope, no charger. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. If you're replacing an existing one, that means you probably already have your chargers.
Right.
Because I know I've got three chargers. I actually had one of these guys burn out on me, which sucks because it was my purple one, and it was the coolest one I had. But now I have three chargers. I have yet to lose one, so I've got three chargers and 2 DSs.
Well, see, but it's not like, and I see what you mean, like, it's one less thing in the box. You don't have to deal with it. You don't, like, have this bulk of chargers if you're buying hardware versions, which is fine.
But I think you should get one.
But it's not like they're giving you a break on the price either because there's no charger. And they're like, no, they're just eliminating that cost and padding their own wallets with, like, I don't know, it's probably like $5 or something. It's probably not much. But
totally, the per unit cost of those?
Yeah.
It's probably less than a dollar.
Yeah. But it's still, like, it is that dollar to them more valuable than having, like, giving your customers a charger for their system? I would say no, but I'm not a hardware manufacturer.
Well, it's like just, if you buy some new Apple product, sure, it comes with headphones, but then you compare those headphones to anything on the market and the headphones are shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You'd rather just them not include them and just buy your own.
But I think that,
again, this thing has to have fucking power to operate, so you do need a charger, and right. That is essential. I don't know.
I think the larger point is that $10 is not much to spend on a video game.
Well, yeah, we're all over the place, and I think you're right.
Like, if you are complaining about spending $10 on a video game, like, I don't know, maybe find a free hobby, because...
Play Pokemon Go!
There you go.
That's free.
Yeah, it sure is.
And you're not beating anybody, you're playing yourself.
I have yet to spend a dime on Pokemon Go, although I have been tempted. And if they had permanent incubators, I don't think we've talked about this before. If they had permanent incubators, I'd drop a few bucks on that.
Yeah, happy about that.
Anyway, I think that's going to bring this show to a close.
Whew.
Next up, we're going to start up the month of December with the Pokemon show. We're going to talk about some more Pokemon, probably some Pokemon Go. Are you guys still playing Pokemon Go?
Yeah, I'm level 18, yeah. Which is, it's much easier to level up now that they have like the win,
the
catch
training.
Of the days and shit. I'm like, holy hell.
Indeed. So yeah, we'll probably talk about some Pokemon Go. And Wes, I think it's your turn to host the Who's That Pokemon.
That's
so
fair enough.
That'll be fun. Mm-hmm. And then we'll just keep the ball rolling with the Super Nintendo show and the mini show and the official show and all that good stuff. So
in our mathematics program.
Yeah, and the math show. So, till next time, everybody.
So long.
Later.